Welcome to the ICANN podcast, the podcast of the Indiana Catholic Conference. The Indiana Catholic Conference is the official public policy voice of the Catholic bishops of Indiana. Welcome back to the ICANN podcast. This is Alexander.
And Angela.
And we're starting out our second to last podcast here. And tomorrow, we're recording on Thursday, but Friday is the expected, Friday, March 8th, the expected last day of session.
We will see. We've said it before, just to remind you, Indiana has what we call a part-time legislature. And in an even number year, like it is now, 2024, by law, they need to be finished no later than March 15th. And because it's an election year and people want to get back to the districts and campaign, they usually end this week instead of the week of the 15th. There's a lot that they have to go through today, and typically they're not there on Friday. So I don't know if they'll come in tomorrow or it'll just be a really late night tonight. Mm-hmm. Yesterday there was a hearing that showed up on the calendar for, I want to say like 6:30 or 6:45 tonight. Then they sent an email out saying, oh no, that's Wednesday night. So it was last night that they had a late night, so who knows?
Yeah, it looks like a lot of conference committees right now, and the process is, it's all over the place right now, because the bills, when they go pass out of one chamber, they go to the next chamber, and then if that second chamber makes any changes, then they have to
either concur, which right. means they agree with it, or if they don't concur, the first chamber doesn't concur with what the second chamber did, then they have to have a conference committee where people from different sides of the aisle are put on the committee. Mm-hmm. But if one party doesn't like what the other party's saying, then they can take them off the committee, which doesn't really seem that fair to me, but that's the rules. They can mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. So that's the process we're in now. There's a few conference committees. And at the conference committees, for the most part, they don't take testimony. Every once in a while, a few years back, there was a landlord-tenant bill that they did take testimony, only because people got really outspoken about it at the second to the last minute.
Mm-hmm. This is the time when some things are popped into bills that weren't expected before. You'll see
probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah,
and aren't relevant, but they want to get it in. Or things are taken out, effectively killing the bill, mm-hmm. and then they die.
Mm-hmm. So it's a crazy last few days here, but this week in the podcast, we want to just take a step back out from the session and look at something that's happening more nationally, but there's been some chatter in Indiana about it in the last week or two, and that's the issue of assisted suicide or physician-assisted suicide, also known as euthanasia, and there's a distinction there.
And in Indiana, it's come up almost every year. Well, it has come up every year, but it doesn't always get a hearing. And it's called end-of-life options, which I've said before, that sounds nice, because those who aren't thinking about physician-assisted suicide or euthanasia, if you think end-of-life options, you're thinking palliative care, you know, mm-hmm. to make the person comfortable, hospice care, if it's more likely than not that they will be passing quickly, or, you know, trying to get your affairs in order, either, you know, emotionally, financially, spiritually. That's what a lot of people would think of when you're talking about the options for the end of your life. Here in Indiana, and I just learned not too long ago, across other states, end of life option is just a nice euphemism for physician assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm. So we've had this bill that's been introduced every session, but this year we saw some resolutions in both the House and the Senate opposing and condemning assisted suicide. So
that would be an easy resolution, but there were some people who questioned, since we don't have a law that allows it, why do we need to spend time to have a resolution to say you can't do what we already say you can't do?
So I think it was just an affirmation of where many of the legislators stand on this particular issue. And for those of you who are interested in looking up that resolution, it is SCR 17. There's some filed in the House, but SCR 17, that's the one in the Senate. And that perhaps passed out of a Senate committee last week.
And perhaps maybe next year could look at those who voted for the resolution and then have a conversation with them about ending the death penalty in Indiana.
Yeah.
You know, if you are anti-abortion, if you're anti, you know, physician-assisted suicide, why not be anti-death penalty too? Something to hold on to for next year.
Yeah, so this is also something that has been a national conversation, as I mentioned before. So what's going on nationally, Angela?
Well, several bishops have spoken out against it. In Virginia, there was an end-of-life options bill that was moving fairly quickly through their government. And so the bishops put out a statement condemning it. Likewise, there was another one
in Maryland.
Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think you said Utah.
Utah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Another one in Utah. And in those states, the bishops came out very firmly. One of the statements from the bishops talked about encouraged the lawmakers to protect their citizens from these empty promises that end-of-life options, you know, glorify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I found really interesting about the assisted suicide debate and really looking at some of the reasons, the talking points of why we shouldn't legalize assisted suicide, aside from the church's moral teaching, is the idea that if you legalize assisted suicide, then access to palliative care and quality of palliative care tends to deteriorate.
Okay.
That's one thing that I found really interesting. And the other one is if you look at the finances of it, we could pretty confidently say that assisted suicide is cheaper, which is not a good thing, right? That if you take somebody's life and you don't have to continue to care for them for some amount of time, that it's going to cost less money to care for them, right?
Well, then I guess people can make that argument then, well, I guess we should reinstate abortion, you know, at will or at random, because we know it is very expensive to rear a child.
Right.
I mean, so it clearly can't be about the money.
Exactly. And that's, I think, something we need to remind people of in a way that we recognize that there, not everything is an economic calculation.
There's
and that's part of the church's responsibility is to always remind us of the human elements of everything that we think about.
Another concern I know a lot of patients' rights groups worry about is people who are at their most vulnerable. You've gotten a catastrophic diagnosis of a chronic debilitating illness or condition. And because of the impact of getting that type of news, you know, how long does it take to process? And when would you know if you were in a place to make such a major decision? I could see people being two different scenarios. A person feeling like they don't want to be a burden to their family and saying, I should just end my life because I don't want them to have to care for me in my weakened condition. I don't want our finances, particularly maybe an elderly couple, don't want finances to be drained and then my, you know, my surviving spouse not be able to take care of themselves. And then the other situation where it's not the person who's experienced it trying to look out for a family member, but you know, all families aren't created equally. And what if there is a family member who doesn't put the best interest of the vulnerable sick person first, and under duress, you know, convinces them that it would be better for everyone, them included, if they didn't have to suffer to end their life prematurely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, last week talked about, you know, not being comfortable when things get close to eugenics, but you could do that in this situation too, that if you're sick, if you're infirmed, if you're going to die anyway, why should you prolong it? Why should we not just spend money, but time and energy or hospital space, and that by making those type of decisions, you people who would do that are saying that there are people who are less valuable,
mm-hmm.
and not needed, and that's extremely troubling.
Mm. This reminds me, I'm glad you brought this up, it reminds me of the lawsuit that's been filed in California, the Patients' Rights Action Fund and many disability advocacy organizations have sued California because they're saying that if somebody in California receives this terminal diagnosis, that then they are kind of put in a channel of less care options available because they have the California assisted suicide law. So they're actually suing based on the Americans for Disabilities Act.
Okay.
And I think that was, the case was filed last year and it's still ongoing. But I remember hearing about that from the Patients' Rights Action Fund and their work on it. And I remember hearing it could be promising. I mean, it's an interesting argument.
This is one area though, when you talk about healthcare and how people might not be getting the best value or the best service. This is one instance where poor people and people of color are not at the forefront.
Mm.
We saw information in the last couple of months, because there are so many bills across the country. People were asking, well, what people are we talking about? Well, if you just take out, you know, the disabled people, you know, and long-term disabilities that might be, what's the standard that affects their daily living activities?
Quality of life.
Right.
Yeah,
you take those people out as a whole, mm-hmm. then the people who are seeking assisted suicide are overwhelmingly white, middle class, adults,
mm-hmm.
you know, somewhere between, was it like 45 and 60 something was the age, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And I know that one finding, well, there's two things. I know that people of color have had a long, what's the word? Not always trusting with the medical community because of something like the Tuskegee thing where the men were, was it Tuskegee? I think it was Tuskegee, where they had syphilis. There was a cure for syphilis,
okay.
but they didn't treat them. And so they ultimately died, and the quality of life was dramatically altered
right.
because they just wanted to see what would happen to them.
Hmm.
And, you know, there are a lot of different instances where, you know, because of eugenics, people were, you know, women of color or poor women or women who had been in prison, and you could question why they were put in prison, were, you know, forced to be sterilized. And so I don't know if, you know, this suspicion of the medical condition be like, oh, you are offering to kill me? Nah, I think I'm good.
Right.
Or, you know, that strong, you know, belief in church and faith and, you know, things in God's own time. Don't know what the answer to that is, but this is one case, one instance where people of color and the poor are not front and center.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. That is pretty interesting. So there's not much to do on that one per se, so much as just to remain vigilant and to understand what's happening around the country and to be able to talk about it well, I think, to highlight some of the wrongs, to understand what the church's teaching is and to be able to articulate that. So I think that's all we have for our podcast this week. And you can expect one more next week that is a roundup of everything that we've seen this year. The legislative session will certainly be over by late next week, and we'll be able to cover everything we've gone through. Well, thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week. God bless.
Blessings. Bye.